Hello, my name is Simon Ward, and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. I'm delighted today to introduce my guest, who is performance cycling coach Matt Botterill. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Well, thanks for having me, Simon. Yeah, it's good to touch base.
Yeah, and I keep reading about Uber performances from triathletes, and on a lot of those, I see that your name comes up somewhere as being responsible for helping them with the bike performance. So you must be doing a lot of good work at the moment.
Yeah. Obviously, like this last few years has been quite crazy. You know, we've kind of came into the sport, and yeah, you know, it's been phenomenal what the athletes I've been working with have achieved. So. I just love the whole sport of triathlon. It's awesome.
Well, you obviously your name came up a lot last year when Tim Don set that amazing time in Brazil.
Yeah,
and he had a spectacular bike there. But you've been working with some other significant athletes. I think Susie Cheatham, Rachel Joyce, Will Clark, Lucy Charles. That's quite an impressive list.
Yeah, it is. You know, it is really an impressive list, and you know, it's like working with those athletes and working with their different coaches and stuff that we're able to take their performance on to the next level. You know, I kind of came into the sport, and I did triathlon for like 2 years because I needed to really learn from it all, and I was kind of. I wanted to see what was missing from that bike element, because obviously I looked at the times and the performance that these athletes were achieving, and I was thinking, wow, you know, they should be going a lot faster, if that makes sense. So that's what I've kind of been doing for the last few years.
Well, I like that bit to start with, because I think you were already had an impressive CV as a cycling specific coach working with people doing time trialing, but some coaches might have just arrogantly thought that they could jump into triathlon. One might say that triathletes are generally not as clued up as on the cycling element, so you might think, well, you could jump into the sport. But I like the fact that you wanted to learn about triathlon by taking part yourself. To me as a coach educator, that shows the mark of somebody who respects the sport and understands it's different, but realizes that they can also add something as long as they learn about it first.
Yeah, definitely. The problem with me, I'm not the kind of person that can read a textbook I'm a visual learner. Mm. So the best way of me being able to relate to what these athletes are going through was doing it myself. Because, you know, I would never envisage how hard it was to run, to swim. You know, how much the impact of running actually has on the old synergy of that training week. And, you know, I felt more pain doing triathlon than I ever, on my bike. it was an experience that, you know, I learned a lot from that. And that's what I've been able to pass on through my coaching, you know.
Well, let's just rewind a little bit then. So you said that when you looked at the times that the triathletes were doing, you thought that there was something missing. But then when you tried your first triathlon and realized that getting on your bike after swimming, however far you had, would obviously feel quite different to jumping on your bike at the start of a time trial. And likewise, when you got off the bike, probably at the end of a time trial, you could fall into the hedge and just lie there till you got your breath back, but you need to keep a little bit back for the run in triathlon. So did you have a different opinion of what might be missing having experienced it yourself, or did you still think the same things were missing?
I still thought the same elements were missing. You know, it's kind of, once I started doing it myself, like I realized it's like you do the swim and like heart rate's elevated, but you know, and it's like, then you've, I did realize that I have to conserve a bit of energy. for that run. But the biggest thing that I kind of noticed was kind of, for a lot of people, how bad the positioning was on the bike and how people were actually pacing races. It kind of didn't make sense to me, because like with time trialing, everybody is kind of so dialed into that position, and there's, you know, you can really use aerodynamics in a clever way. And I don't think there was that many people that were switched on that were actually doing this. So that's what I was able to learn initially.
Okay, so that's quite interesting what you say there about position and pacing. If we can go back to position first, and this would fit in quite nicely with the podcast we did a couple of weeks ago with Louise Edmondson, where we talked about bike fit and how a bike fit was probably one of the best, if not the best, investment you could make for improving your bike performance. And Louisa doesn't use any of the fancy digital systems. She just uses her eye as a physiotherapist and a sports medicine specialist, and she takes a great deal of interest in how stiffness and tightness has developed over the years with people getting injured.
That's really clever though, doing that. You know, understand. You know, it's like when we, I don't know, it's like a lot of these bike fitting systems, you know, they're devised, you're looking at certain angles and you're almost like trying to get everything green or whatever that system uses. But it's analysing the body, what can it actually do, like biomechanically, how, you know, because it's like, you know, it's exactly what we do. You're never going to get everybody into a slam position, ultra aero. You've got to take steps to do that. It's like swimming, you know, it's like you've got to do drills. In exactly as you go through that process to learn to swim, you have to do all these drills to get the body to adapt, you know, getting more flexibility, getting, you know, it's like looking at strength and conditioning. You've got to look at everything. And that's how you know, it's like to ride a bike faster. You've got to look at every 1% that's from, but starting with rider position, it's the most important part. Because it's such a big saving that you can make.
When Louisa does her bike fits, she'll look at tightness. So she'll look at, for instance, range of movement around the hips and the hip flexors. She'll have a person lie on their back. They'll lie with both legs straight out, and then they'll lift one leg up towards the ceiling.
Yeah.
And she'll see how much range they've got there. If there's a limited range in the hip, that's going to limit A, the aerodynamic position somebody can get into, and B, the amount of time they're going to be able to spend there before things become too tight. So that's then a weakness that gets marked down as an action point to work on. But she'll then also look at things like, can you do a one-legged squat? The involvement of the glutes in a one-legged squat is quite important. And if you can't do a one-legged squat, it means you haven't really got the control from the glutes, and that's going to affect your bike performance. And then she'll go on and look at press-ups. What happens with the shoulder blades when you do the press-up? And for a lot of people, you'll see that they start to wing, and that means there's a lack of control around them, and that will have an impact on tightness around the upper back and the shoulders in the later stages of a triathlon when you've been in aerodynamic position for a while.
Yeah.
And then that's going to affect how you run. So I was absolutely fascinated by all of this.
Yeah, that's definitely what it's all about, though, because it's how you deliver that power transfer through the pedals. So it's really good that, you know, for her to be looking at all this. Yeah, you know, you combine something like that biomechanical assessment with then an air, you know, ultimately, getting that athlete fitted on the bike and then looking at them from an aerodynamic point of view, then it's really clever.
So let's assume that our mythical cyclist has been to see Louisa, or somebody similar to Louisa. They've had this top-to-toe assessment of their skeletal structure. They've got a list of elements that they need to work on, including flexibility. They've got this bike that now Louisa's adjusted into what she thinks would be the best position, but they've still got to get used to it. When they come down to see you, you talked about aerodynamics being a big part of it, and you didn't think a lot of triathletes had really got hold of that. So what are the key parts about aerodynamics that you would be looking at initially?
So initially, like with aerodynamics, like what you have to remember, the body is 80% of the, you know, your drag coefficient. So like this is why body position is so important. So number one, the biggest thing that you want to be looking at is, like, clothing is the biggest part that you're going to make the biggest gain in terms of, you know, the body is so large that ideally you want to try and get the, if money's no object, then I would always say try and buy the best skin suit that you can realistically afford. But also then you want to, you know, it's like, you know, we read all these reports about what is the fastest helmet. There isn't really a fastest helmet, but it's how you dial that helmet into the rider.
Okay.
So you can read all these reports, you can read all the wind tunnel data that you want, but everybody can do different, you know, how they can hold that head position is very important to what you can then do with the body as a whole. And then when what we want to be able to do is, it's like if we're looking at, you know, like biomechanically, we know that you sound, that's what we address first. And then we've got to actually see what is your shoulder rotation like? How flexible are you?
Yes.
Because front on, you know, if we're looking at you from a front on point of view, we want to try and reduce, you know, the width of your shoulders, the hand position. We want to dial that in as best we can, but we need to see what, yeah, you know, that flexibility that you've got.
That's an interesting point there. I went to the wind tunnel in Southampton a few years ago with a guy called Stephen Roach. Do you know Stephen from Brighton?
Yeah, I know the name.
Not the Stephen Roach that won the Giro and the Tour de France in the same year. But yeah, and he showed me three things. Changing from a road helmet to a pointy aero helmet, save 3% drag. Changing from a normal cycle shirt to a skin-tight cycle shirt, save 3% drag. And moving my elbows in tighter, you know, so that they're closer together.
Yeah, it's kind of elbows tight. Yeah. But, you know, like one of the key, it's this shoulder position, you know, that's what you... You know, it's the shoulder position that's the most important part.
Right,
You know, getting those, you know, narrow shoulders. Not everybody can do that, you know. And that's when it's like altering. We're always looking at altering people's pole angle. So, you know, it's like with tri bar position. You know, you buy an off the peg tri. You know, like you bolt your standard tri bars on. Then they're going to be either flat or probably 20 degrees. But ideally, everybody's going to have a different pole position that they need, and that's what enables
you. Can I just confirm what you mean by pole position? Because
The poles are the extensions that come out the front to get into the tri bar.
Yes. Okay.
Those you'll get different degrees of extension that you actually need to get you into a better position. And then we're looking at, you know, like things like pad width and. How do we dial everything in? Because you can reduce, you know, if you look at like head and shoulders, you know, and getting the right helmet, we can probably save like 15, 20 watts in those just by dialing that in. So, but then, yeah, that's the first element that you want to look at is kind of, yeah, your bike position, and then how do you dial that in? And it's not about all just slamming the front end. You know, a lot of people, you know, especially in the time trial world, they think about just slamming the front end. It's all, you know, you've got to look at power transfer and aerodynamics. There's always a trade-off between the two. But that's what, yeah, we're kind of able to do.
Louisa set me up on my time trial bike last year before I went to Hawaii. And I'd moved the pads in closer.
Right.
And she said, "Oh, I'm not sure that's the best position for you." She said, "You've got quite broad shoulders, and whilst it would be more aerodynamic, I think it'll restrict your breathing. So I'd
move
a bit wider apart." So there is a compromise, isn't it, between comfort of breathing and, you know, we're in an aerodynamic sport. And I know Louisa, one of the podcasts we're going to do next is just to talk about breathing and about being able to breathe to the belly rather than the chest. I guess that's some, I don't know if you work on that, but that's something that I know that the physios have talked about a lot there. And if you can breathe into the stomach, I guess you can have your elbows a little closer together.
Absolutely. You know, and that's the thing, that you've got to train all these elements. So then it's like where people, you know, we look at these individuals and we set them up, then we, you know, you go away and we're like, okay, so now what you need to work on we give, you know, you have to look at drills, and it might be breathing. It might be, you know, you've got to do certain drills to then hold your shoulders in position. Or it might be, you know, ideally, you know, the ultimate thing is you want to be trying to push the head forward as well as holding the shoulders. But you're never going to cure all of this at once. You can only like focus on one element. And that's the ultimate fit. So you're biomechanically sound, but then you've got this position, and then you've got to train into it. You know, it's like when I went into the wind tunnel, you know, I've spent numerous hours in there, but you know, I'm holding that drill for, you know, that run for probably 12 minutes. But ideally, I've got to train my body, and what I was able to do, I could sustain it over like a 50-mile distance.
Yes.
And then that's the key to being able to – it's a good way of – if you can dial that in, it's probably like a year's training.
Right.
You know, you could probably make like – you know, I remember my first wind tunnel trip. I made like 35 watts, which was incredible. And I would say in kind of the time triathlon world is, there's so many people out there that they could make some massive gains. Like time trialing's evolved over the last 3 to 4 years. You know, I think we've played a big part in that, and people have got wise to it. But triathlon still is quite far behind. You know, even at professional level of the positions and, you know, how people are riding. So
I think, it does my head in, Matt, so it must do the same for you when you see somebody on a bike that's cost them several thousand pounds.
Yeah.
And then they're riding along on a flat section of road. I mean, I don't know whether you'd be able to put a figure on when one should start riding on the hoods to get more power versus, you know, if you're going up an incline, whether there's a particular percentage of gradient where it's more advantageous to be sat upon the bars slightly further.
It's to do with cadence. You know, it's like when you really start labouring that gear. I would say that ideally that's when you want to come off the hoods, and you know, it's controlling that breathing. Mm. So it just depends on each individual. So what your overall how fast you're actually traveling the course. There's not like a speed element, it's kind of a cadence,
right?
Cadence element. So you start, you know, if you're laboring like 50-60 cadence, then yeah, I would come off the hood, get control your breathing. But then realistically, what you know, it's like for me, I'm much more controlled actually riding on the on the tri bars, but then I've trained my core to enable me to do that. So I'm working at different cadences in training. That's something else that you kind of need to bring into it.
Okay.
So yeah, there's loads of different elements.
Okay, maybe we can come back to that cadence thing in a minute then. So the point I was coming back to there about what drives me mad is that I see people on these expensive bikes, they've got this amazing position, but then you see them riding on the flat when they should be in their aero position.
Yeah.
And they're sitting up. And if you were to question them about it, they'd say, oh yeah, well, I can't hold it for very long, that position, because my back aches. And you think, well, why have you got a position like that's uncomfortable? Or B, why haven't you practiced for long periods of time to make sure it's not comfortable?
Yeah, definitely. That's the big, you know, it's like we're all obsessed. Like everybody loves equipment, don't they? You know, it's like some of the bikes in triathlon, it's mind blowing. But, you know, you look at all these top, you know, like the top design frames, it's probably like 3 or 4 watts in them. And some of the positions, you're probably giving like 30, 40 watts away. So the biggest thing that you want to, if you want to go quicker, yes, if you've got this Uber bike or, even if you haven't got the best bike in the world, if you can get a great position, you're probably going to, like, you know, over a course of your race, you can probably find like 2-3 miles an hour. It's incredible. But yeah, obviously, there's no winning position. Do you know what I mean? Everybody can do, everyone, how they can adapt and how they get that power transport is so individual. You've always got to look at the individual. So, what they can actually do.
That's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because we spend so long training to boost functional threshold power. If that's our benchmark figure for how fast we're going to go, we spend ages and months and months and months, sessions after session, beasting ourselves, trying to improve our power output and our power to weight ratio.
Yeah.
Once you're at a reasonable level and, you know, closer to your capacity, those gains require more hard work and take longer to come by. And yet here we are. We talked about marginal gains at the beginning, but these are like great big low-hanging fruit that are right in front of you that we could have, but we're missing. So we go, yeah, I've got to get on the turbo to do those threshold intervals so I can get, you know, I can get another watt on there. But and yet here you are talking about, well, get that position right and you could save yourself 10 watts straight away.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's why you've got to, it's like doing your drills in training. You know, if you are really struggling with position, then that's when you want to train. You know, I would rather see an athlete get a drop off in power than and not hold the position. Do you know what I mean? You've really, you know, especially like this winter's been dreadful, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Where if that's the case, then what you've got to say is, okay, so I can't get out on my bike, but what I can do is train the body position.
Yep.
And, you know, one of the biggest things that I've found that is really helpful is just, you know, it's even like training in front of the mirror. Just look at yourself and just say, well, you know, practice with your shoulders, look at different, holding different hands positions, looking at the shoulders, get somebody to film you, you know, like with different helmets. And that's how, you know, you can do this. Some of this stuff you can do at home, you've got to be really clever because, but if you bring it all to, you know, if you train all these elements, then you could find, like, you know, there's probably, there is like 30, 40 watts for a lot of age group triathletes from what I've seen over the course and, you know, this last few years that they could find some massive gains. And everyone's, I've met a few age groupers now where they're almost like worried about, you know, they don't think they're like good enough to wear an aero helmet.
Ah, yes, yes.
Bits like that. And I'm like, please just, you know, try and get an aero helmet because you're probably going to save like 40, 50 seconds over the course of that race by just making that one change, you know. So
there's definitely a lack of confidence that you hear from people about certain things like, oh, you know, I'm not worthy of wearing that. It's a bit like running drills. You know, if you saw Alistair Brownlee or Jess Learmonth by the side of the main road doing running drills, you drive past, and if you recognise them, you go, "No, oh, you see, that's why they're a medalist. They do all those drills." If it's Joe Bloggs, you know, Joe Bloggs thinks, "Well, everybody's just going to laugh at me."
Yeah.
Your top athletes don't worry about what people think. They're just looking for
not at all. The thing that amazes me is kind of, you know, when I came into the sport, like the people that do triathlon on, they are so dedicated to. Yep. Well, whatever level it is, because it does just take up, you know, there's so many bits that you've got to actually train for but you can find like the free speed that is actually out there. And it's not just about going out and buying the best equipment.
No,
it's, you know, you can just do small things like just getting the right bike fit. And those gains are massive.
Well, we've got about 5 or 10 minutes left and, let's see if we can just wrap up on aerodynamics and then come back to this subject about pacing. So you talked about clothing. There's been a big trend, certainly amongst the pros and probably some of the top age groupers now, to wearing a skin suit on the bike.
Yeah.
And I've noticed in Hawaii that a lot of the pros then are actually getting out of the skin suit and running in running gear because it's more comfortable.
Yeah.
And clearly, if you have to pop into the portal or anything, it's a lot easier if you're not wearing a skin suit. But wearing a skin suit, you mentioned there, getting the best skin suit, getting something that's tight-fitting. You mentioned about the helmet. Are there any other aerodynamic changes that triathletes can make that either that's going to be part of their body or that they're going to wear? And then we'll come on to aerodynamics of the bike.
There is little things like, you know, it's like you see people like, there's like things like calf guards. You know, you see like a lot of the cyclists, like if you follow our athletes, you know, you'll see them wear these crazy socks. But again, it's like 3 or 4 watts in those socks. It's all those little bits that, you know, you laugh. But then, you know, it's like skin suits and stuff. Like, just coming back to this, that, you know, somebody that's wearing like their normal shorts and, you know, like a baggy road jersey, you know, if we were to measure that in a wind tunnel to something like a, you know, a skin suit that's developed in the tunnel, there's probably like 30 watts in that. So it's, you know, body, you know, you take that that skin suit and this bike fit, you know, all of a sudden we're not just, you know, we can be finding like 40, 50, 60 watts. It's incredible. And people, you know, they might listen to this and laugh, but there's a reason that, you know, the athletes that I've kind of worked with, they are going so fast. And it's not just like the training element. It's that you're looking at every 1% that you can actually find, you know, and that's what I'm always trying to do. It's kind of, you know, I've done this sport for like 28 years. I'm still trying to find all those 1%. And yeah, you've got to look at, I would just kind of say for most, you know, people in triathlon, kind of look at what the professionals are doing on, you know, in cycling. You know, it's like you see them ride the time trial, look at their body positions, look at the clothing and pick up on that. So, yeah.
I mean, we talked, Louisa and I covered this. You hear a lot of people saying, I can get, if I do my FTP test, I can get more power sitting up than I can doing in my aero position.
Yeah.
But Bradley Wiggins set the world's fastest time for an hour, you know, the world longest distance in 1 hour in an aero position. So clearly it is possible to get your best power in an aero position.
But
we must come back to that element that you mentioned before. It takes a long time to practice putting out power in that position and sustaining it. You can't just expect it to happen.
No, not at all. You know, I think the biggest thing is like for most, like if it was all about power, this is what everybody needs to remember. We'd all be riding around on road bikes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what you need to do, you know, when it comes to riding your time trial bike, you're exactly right. You need to train. You know, I always say, you know, you've got to, you know, if you're really struggling, then you want to be spending like 60-70% of your training time riding a time trial bike.
Yep.
If you're doing your long ride, you know, you're going out there for 4, 5, 6 hours, for example, if you're training for like an Ironman distance, then you need to be doing 50% of that ride in time trial position to get the body to adapt. What is kind of, you know, it's like for most athletes, they kind of have like a 15 to 20 watt drop off in power from, you know, road position to TT. It's kind of when we're seeing like 40, you know, even 50 watt drop off, that to me, then that's generally that the setup of that bike isn't quite right, or you're, you know, you're just spending no time in it, in that position.
Yeah.
So it's like for most people, if you've got like this Uber bike already and you think, well, oh, such and such a company's brought out this next new one, you know, that the margins in it are so small, you're better off just focusing on training the body to really adapt.
Let's just talk about some elements, because I know everybody wants to buy nice bits for the bike. They're, you know, what's the best wheels to get? Should I be using 23mm tyres or 25s or 28s? Should I be what about ceramic speed? Should I be used oversized jockey wheels on my derailleurs? What about overlized chain set? You know, what do you think about all of those? And which,
yeah,
in your opinion,
which
ones do you think will make a difference? And
so
which ones
number
just...
one is, we've looked at, you know, we're talking about bike, we're talking about clothing, but the next one that is really important is wheel selection.
Okay.
You know, and it's the interaction between tires and wheels that is so important. You know, like now a lot of clinchers, and we're all going to tubeless, but that's all to do with like how the rim seals around the tire. It's all about airflow.
Yeah.
So. And that's what is going fast is all about. It's about how the air detaches from you. Like if you've got the wrong setup, then it's all going to be turbulent. It's all going to be all over the place. But you want it to leave you, in this nice. I'm not sure the words to use it, but like in this nice airflow, so it's not turbulent around you. But tires and wheels are really important part. But it's not just about, okay, so, you know, 80 mil rims or a disc is quicker. If you can't handle that wheel and it's pulling you from side to side, and you've not got stability, you're going off the tri-bars, and actually that isn't the correct wheel set for you. What you want to be able to, like the fastest wheel set is the one that's, you feel it's stable. That's number one. But, and then another key part is then, so you've got this wheel set, it's getting the right tire selection for it. You know, it's like I think a lot of people are actually scared of puncturing on, you know, when they do the triathlon, but the gains in tires, yeah, you don't want like the most uber lightest thing, but if you Google like rolling resistance for tires in cycling, I can't remember that, it'll send you to this website. And the gains in, say, like running like a latex tube, that's going to give you 2 watts per tire. You look at some of the tire, you know, get this tire selection, and there's probably like 14 watts in a set of tires. Do you know what I mean? So people really need to think about tire selection cleverly, but you always want the interaction of the tire and the rim. They want to fit well. That's very important.
You talked about the right wheel selection to make you feel comfortable. Yeah. I'm always amazed in Hawaii. There's a I don't know if you've probably followed it, but I don't know if you've ever ridden there. But
I've never ridden, but yeah, I follow it every year. But hoping to go out this year.
once the winds pick up, usually when the pros, and particularly the pro females who are, you know, 20 minutes behind the guys in the starting, so the winds pick up at a certain time of the day, and coming back down from Harvey, you've got a long downhill section, but it's also quite exposed to winds from the sea from the right, and you can see some of these smaller females, you know, they're quite slight. Some of them, Marinda Carfrae and some of those smaller girls, weigh 50 to 55 kilos. And, but they're riding deep rim wheels and they're getting blown across the road. And it must, you know, as competent as they are.
Definitely. It's
got to be scary.
You know, that's what I mean. There is wheel sets out there that handle like different yaw angles very well. But, ideally, if that wheel's pulling you back, if you're a small athlete and every time you ride that wheel, it's just like, you know, it's like giving you this pulling sensation. You're on the tri bars, then it is going to slow you down significantly. Even if the wind tunnel data actually says that wheel is faster, it's not going to be faster for you.
No.
Wheel selection is, I would always say that, you know, if you are serious about thinking of, you know, buying these aero wheels, if you just try, you know, if you've got friends that you can try these, or some bike shops actually do it where you can try the wheels out, I would say that you want to try and get out there on a windy day and test it, these wheel sets.
One of my friends picked up one of those new zip wheels. Have you seen them? The rims are almost serrated around where the spokes fit in. And he borrowed one and he actually won his age group in Kona. But he came back from this ride and said, you can really tell the difference in the way this doesn't catch the wind coming from the side. It's amazing how little things just make a big difference. So just moving on there, Matt, because I'm conscious of the time and our stated 30-minute objective, already gone past that, but we're in a really interesting conversation here. So we've got wheel selection. What about something as silly as making sure your drive chain is clean and that everything runs smoothly? Because I see so many bikes that are just not well maintained.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you see like a lot of the pros like running like Ceramic Speed, you know, like these real big mechs now. You know, they're trying to save like 1.5 watts with one of those mechs. But, you know, it's like a bad chain to a good one. It's probably between 6 to 8 watts, you know. So you don't want it to be ultra clean. And, you know, it's like using things like paraffin wax is a, you know, you are going to save a significant time, you know, over the course of the distance of that race. But what I would say, the amount of people that come to our unit and we always check the chain, I'm amazed. You know, might be running dual race on the bike and they've had this, you know, chain on for, you know, like 2 years. But I always say to people, buy the cheapest chain and change it more frequently. And then again, you're going to save time, you know, 6 to 8 watts in the chain. It's incredible. And I'm sure people might be saying, oh, this guy's nuts. But, you know, we've measured all these things and that's, yeah.
What's really interesting here, Matt, is you've reeled off a whole load of things here. 1.5 watts here, 2 watts there, 6 watts there, 10 watts there. Right, if we added all that up, we'd probably got enough watts to amount to about, you know, 18 months to 2 years worth of hard work, training.
Definitely.
Just with a bit of diligence to how you set your bike up, how you get into your bike position, and then working on that regularly, and you know, you don't have to be riding your time trial bike at a hard pace. You can be riding at an easy pace. As you said, if it's a terribly bad weather day on Sunday, get on your turbo trainer, put your time trial bike on there, sit on there, watch the TV for 2 hours, and just be able to stay in that position comfortably for a couple of hours, spinning along in a nice gear. That's going to be as beneficial.
Absolutely, Simon. That's what I'm a big believer in. You know, like, I've heard a lot of coaches say that sometimes you say, "Oh yeah, you just put a session in there for the sake of it." Do you know what I mean? It's not like a specific session, but I always believe in that every training session, sometimes you have got to mentally switch off. But, you know, like, you're on the turbo, then realistically it should have like a purpose. So it might be that this session is about working on aero. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And, you know, you look at, then you start doing these drills, and before you know it, you'll see the change. You'll see, you know, that's what I love seeing. You know, it's like when people come here, and then you might see them in like 3 months, and I can always see the difference in the people that really focus on it and the ones that don't. You know, you're able to, you know, we're measuring all these elements, and you're like, you can just see it like visually. So get working.
Let me sum up then, Matt, because I think that would be a good position, you know, for us to finish here, and then we can move on to the training and physical preparation in our next chat. If I can summarise, position is critical. The actual position that you can attain and then maintain so that you can have a good run is critical. But having that position, and really, as I said earlier, it follows on from the podcast we did with Louisa, is that the position that your bike's set up in, with your handlebars at a certain position and your saddle at a certain position, that's just the start point. And really, there's a lot of hard work. Not intense physical work, but regular work, boring work, really. The stuff that's not attractive, the stuff that you don't tell your mates about because it doesn't make people sort of, you know, pat you on the back and tell everybody what a hard case you are. We talk about doing the drills, being able to hold your position, working on your core, coming back to being able to hold your position, using a mirror, working on cadence, you know, and just gradually building up the amount of time that you can spend in that position, and then paying attention to your aerodynamics, the type of skin suit you're wearing, little things that are going to make a difference, the helmet, the aero helmet that's comfortable for you, and then going on to some of the things that you can do on the bike, but always making sure that the technical changes you make on the bike in terms of buying new kit comes secondary to improving the aerodynamics of the body, right?
You've rounded that off very well.
Okay, so I think I've got what Matt's told me there. I hope you have too. But if you really want to get hold of what Matt's saying, then I can recommend a couple of things for you. Firstly, why don't you pop along to Matt's website? It's www.mattbottrillperformancecoaching.com. MATTBOTTRILL performancecoaching.com. When you're there on the home page, a little box will open up and ask you if you would like to sign up for Matt's cycling performance newsletter, which comes out weekly. I'd say, based on what I've heard from Matt today, that would be a really good first step. You could also, when you're on that website, make an appointment to go and see Matt. You could get a bike fit there, or you may even have a bike fit already done. You might have been to see Louisa for a bike fit, but once you've got that, then Matt's going to show you how to make the most of that position and give you some of his inside information on how you can become an Uber cyclist, not by training harder, but by being smarter. And I think, Matt, that's just about it for today, isn't it?
I really enjoyed this, Simon. It's good to get some points across. So Thank you for having me.
So, listeners, Matt and I will be back next week with another call where we're going to be talking about performance on the bike. So we will be talking about training sessions you can do, cadence, pacing, power, that sort of stuff. But for now, Matt, thank you very much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, thank you for being here yet again. And we'll be back very soon. Bye-bye. That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today, and I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon and 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.